Okay, today is November 5th, 1984, and I'm in Galena, Alaska with Edgar Nolner. This is a tape for the Yukon Koyukuk Biographical Sketch Project. We've been reviewing Edgar's biography, and now we want to add just a couple of additional stories and re-record the story about Larson Charles. Edgar, you were telling a story as we were going through the biography about you're almost getting arrested one time down at Nulato. Would you mind telling that story again? I thought it was a pretty good one.
Yeah. Well, they were having a stick dance down Nulato long ago, and lots of people there, and everybody was going around the pool, and I went in there, and all the young guys was behind in the corner where the big tank stove is, and I was telling stories. They told me to tell some stories. So I was telling stories, and we were all laughing. Pretty soon the deputy marshal, Frank Miller, and his wife came in, and they were going by, and he looked at me. And they got a couple of chairs for them, then they sat out over there, out there. And he looked at me once in a while, he looked at me, and I keep on telling jokes and stories, and they stayed about an hour or more, and then they started to go out, and he looked at me and went by. And next morning, I was to visit to Oliver Jones. He used to be the commissioner, and he had a house above Summer Store, and I was going up there, and he was coming out from Jones' place when I met him. And he said, good morning. And his face turned red. Then he walked up towards the jail. Then I went in, and Oliver Jones was laughing. And he said, you know what? He said, you pretty near got arrested last night. I said, yeah. And he asked me, what you'd do? I says, I'd go with them. That's false arrest, ain't it? And he said, yeah, you could have sued him pretty good, but... He was lucky he went by, he said. Yeah.
And why was he going to arrest you?
Yeah.
Why was he?
He thought
I was drunk. And when he asked, he told Jones that he think I was drunk last night. He says, I think Edward was really drunk last night. And I know Jones since I was pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years old, I guess, or 12, 15. Mm-hmm. And long in there. And Jones told him, gee, he said, I know him since he's about this big, young kid. And I never heard he take a drink in his life. And he said, Frank Miller, his face got red. Yeah. He said, yeah, but he was thinking, that's pretty close. And then Jones told me, and I went out, and then I was telling them boys, I pretty near got arrested last night. And they asked me, what you do? I said, I'd go with them. That's false arrest, ain't it? And he said, yeah, you could have seen him good, but he was lucky. He had a roadhouse or place from Fairbanks out towards Circle, someplace. That's what they call Miller House, I guess, right
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. And just the guy, he died how many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, good. Let's stop and check and see. Looks like from the needle like we're getting good quality, but let's check. Edgar, you were also telling a story about somebody was floating down the river.
Uh-huh. It was about Ruby at Cochrane.
Uh-huh.
And there was an old man there, and one white guy was coming, floating down on a Yukon boat, and he asked this old guy, he said, how far is the Holy Cross? And the old guy said, 1.5 miles. And that guy could see over 5 miles down the river. That guy didn't say nothing. Harry Pitcher used to tell me about that all the time, 1.5 miles.
Who used to tell you?
Harry Pitcher.
Harry Pitcher.
Yeah.
Well, the other story that we recorded before that I'd like to record again, because we did get quite as good quality on it as I would like, is the story about Larson Charles. And as I recall, it started out with something about putting the boat back in the river. And, well, you pick it up and go from there.
One fall, we thought it was going to have early fall, and then there was lots of ice started be under, lots of ice on the river, and then I pulled my boat out of the water and along the edge, ready to shove it back in. And he got Wilford to pull his little boat up. He had a one lumber, 3-4 horsepower, by the house, and when there was quite a bit of ice out there, pretty soon it turned warm and then all melt. And he said, "Let's go hunt up that way." I said, "Okay." I told him, "We're going to use my boat, because I had a boat and canvas boat and stove in it." "No," he said, "you're going to use mine, because if there's ice, we can leave my boat any place." And then we got ready, and Walter Williams and me and Larson and old man Cleaver at Sanderstead.
Is that Peter Cleaver?
No. I'm going to have got his name.
It's okay.
Louis Cleaver. And we went up above a camp towards Clally. We went in there, no water, so we stayed overnight there. The next day we went above Loudon on the other side, and we stopped, and it was raining a little, and we went back. We seen one calf at all. We let it go. And came out, and he said, "We've got to move up there where there's lots of dry cottonwood." I told him, "This place good enough." But no, he said, "This bum." So he gathered up his stuff. We got ready, and then we started up. He started the motor, and he was steering, and he was sitting in front of me. I was sitting behind. Walter and I were sitting behind. And the old man was sitting out in front. And the motor slowed down. He reached down and then he speeded up. The handle on the McNeeder dropped down, and then he lifted up and was going along, and he was getting to that place. You could see a bunch of dry cottonwood there. And he turned around to me and said, "Is that the place?" I said, "Yeah." And that thing slowed down, so he had leather gloves on. He reached down in there, and there's a bolt sticking out about an inch from the plant on the shaft. And when he reached down, it caught him right here, and it just wrapped his arm right around the shaft.
Caught him in the back of the wrist.
Right here, the leather glove.
Uh-huh, the back
it
of his glove.
It broke right here between the elbow and the wrist right here, broke. And just right here about a few inches from the shoulder right here.
Uh-huh.
And he bumped the motor, the spark plug at Gettysburg. He got a big cut on his face. And when he turned, blood running down, and Walter jumped up, and his arm was wrapped around the shaft, so I jumped up and I pulled on his arm ladle, and Walter was turning the motor backwards, and then we got his arm out. And bone was sticking out here, all this one all busted up. And then just a little bit right here.
In his upper arm?
You and some, I don't know, just about this much or so. But the whole thing was cut right off. Bone sticking there, bone sticking out right here. Blood running down here. A big cut right here too.
Just below his left eye?
Uh-huh, right on the cheek. On top of the wound right in here. And then he had canvas in the boat, and I had hunting knife. I grabbed my knife and I just strip about an inch wide and about 3-4 feet long. And then I cut his shirt right here, then I tied it up right here, tight right here.
Just below his shoulder?
Below, just to hold the bone sticking out. Just right there, below the shoulder right here. I just tied tight. And then we laid him down behind where we were sitting. And then Walter started the motor, and then we start down. And we got stuck, but we got off right away, and it was getting dark. And by around Beam Station, we thought he was dead, could never move. And then pretty soon he said, ah. And he said, how far we're from Galena? And we told him, we're just at Beam Station. That's about 4 miles above Galena.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we landed down there, no noise, and pretty soon he moved again. He said, ah. And Walter ran up the bank and told him, guys, there was White Speeds, Bessie's, Father Mac, there that time. All run down and they pack him up in the blanket. They put blanket around him and they packed him up his house. And then they fixed it better. And Father Mac run back to the station. And there was a wind plane coming up at Union Creek. Like the one Harold got now, the EC3 or 4, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was at Union Creek going to Fairbanks, so took off and they called him and told him to stop here, pick the sky up. And they took him back, and a few minutes after that he came, and then they put him on there. And then they took him to Fairbanks. Lucky there was a nurse on there too. And they put that thing around here, so we put a stick on it.
Mm-hmm. Tightened it up.
Uh-huh. First time when you was being them. And the wife, basically, I guess, wanted to cut it off. The words are just a little bit here.
Mm-hmm. But who wanted to cut it off?
No, Bessie's.
Uh-huh.
He was a postmaster here. His wife was a teacher. And then they told him no. And then, he took him. And she, going up that nurse, let it bleed a little bit, because it's on this side. Let it bleed a little bit and tightened it. Made it all the way, and then Dr. Scheibel and Hagelin work on it, and how many hours to put bolts on it, and, and they put cast on it. And then way after that, and how long after that, he came down here big, like this. He said he will, he said he thought he cut it off, and he came to, but he said, no, pretty soon he see his fingers out there. He said he was glad. He fixed it all up.
I'm going to have to... So Dr. Scheibel and Dr. Hagland were the ones that fixed him up? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. How long did he work on? They fixed it up, put bolts on it, and put his arm. After that, he worked with it and shoot, and yeah.
So when he came back down, he had a big cast on it.
Yeah, very cast like this. Yeah.
And it was crooked. He had it bent at the elbow in front of him.
Yeah, like this. Mm-hmm. It didn't break right here, though. Just right here and right here.
In his forearm and in his upper arm.
This thing didn't break here.
Yeah.
Right here at all.
Yeah.
All busted up. And this one right here, the whole thing was busted up. Bone sticking out here, bone sticking up this here.
Oh, nasty.
But I didn't even get scared. I just started working on right away. They said if I didn't do it a few minutes, he would have been dead, because the whole thing would just
bleed to death.
Yeah, just a few minutes or so. 2-3 minutes, they say he would have been dead.
Mm-hmm. One word I didn't get clearly when you were telling the story, I couldn't catch it. Was the place where you stopped to camp overnight initially?
Mm-hmm. Vinatali.
Vinatali.
Tali Kakit, yeah.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay. And about where was the dry cottonwood where you...
That's above Loudon on the other side, below Jimmy's camp.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's really good. Anything else about that you can think of that we ought to put on the tape?
No, just so.
What year do you think that happened, Edgar?
47, 46, 47. Long in there.
After the war?
Yeah, after the war.
Boy, how big an engine was that?
It was a little 3-4 Kermit.
A
Kermit or a Dubry, I don't know which one.
Yeah.
One of them little one longer. Tick, 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 tick,
oh,
tick.
Yeah.
3 miles an hour. 3 miles an hour stuff. You know, I went to have about a 5 horse for her when I was on CA boat. And then Larson was running his boat and he thought he was going to beat her, but she was running away from him with that 5 horse. Johnson. That little 5 horse, it's hanging out here doing a... I care the first one. pseudonym. Uh-huh. We still get it.
Oh, well, that's good.
Tick, 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 tick.
Oh, I'll bet.
I didn't have a...
First time I gave him a kicker in my leg.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and then she was going up one time, and Danny Patrick had a bigger kicker, and he used to go around her like this, going from when she left Galena, going up to the fish camp along the island over there, going like this. Pretty soon, when he went like this, he'd snag it, and then he'd swamp.
Oh! Now, who was this Patrick?
Danny Patrick. And he made it to the shore once, and then pretty soon he holler, get on the end of the island, lower end of the island, he holler, but soon somebody went over, pick him up.
That's what he got for fooling around with Bessie.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. There was one other little story I just thought of that you told while we were doing the review, too, and that was about Father Rossi and how he used to travel up the river. Can you tell that one again?
Yeah. He used to go up on a steamboat, put his boat on this Yukon boat, and then float back down the river.
Uh-huh.
He stopped every camp all along.
Uh-huh. How far up would he go?
I don't know, maybe 10 now or Cochrane. Up that was someplace, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And he's always coming down the river, float down the river.
Uh-huh.
He's not like my old man, pole and row, and going up the river.
Didn't you tell me, weren't you telling us that he floated into a fish trap or
something?
Oh, a
fish wheel. Then he got the fish wheel one time, did he? He got cross right on the fish wheel in the spars.
Oh, dear. When was Father Rossi here? Do you remember?
Oh, he was long ago.
Was this before you moved to Galena or after you moved?
He was around.
I got
married him by him. By him, 1922.
So he married you, and then how long after that was he around?
Not too long after that.
Yeah.
Because he was old.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. So he was around mainly in the early 20s.
Yeah, around Nolato.
Oh, okay.
Nolato or Holy Cross, down that way.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Well, I can look him up in the Jesuit records too. Well, Edgar, thank you very much. That's great. I'm glad to get that story recorded again, and the other ones, too. Anything else that you can think of that we should put on the tape while it's on?
I don't know which one.
Any other memories that you may have come up with that we may have forgotten to record back in the spring when we were doing the original recording?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you.